everybody, and welcome to another episode of It's All About Food. Thank you so much for joining us today. As some of you may know, It's All About Food is all about food. And we talk about so many subjects related to food on this program, as we have been doing since 2009, thanks to being broadcast here at the Progressive Radio Network. Who knows how much influence food has on everything? Certainly we can't live without food, right? But food represents so many different things on the planet. The way we grow food, we can do it sustainably, we can do it abundantly, or we can do it in a way that does not work with nature. And unfortunately, a lot of big agriculture today does that, growing food with pesticides and herbicides and petrochemical fertilizers, digging up all of that carbon from under the ground and then letting it go into the air. And as a result, we have global warming. It's a cycle that is not sustainable. And plus, big agriculture. What is big agriculture? These are a small number of companies that are growing very few types of food. Most of it is to feed animals, to feed people. So we're growing acres and acres and acres and acres of soy, genetically modified soy, corn, genetically modified corn, alfalfa, to feed animals, and not necessarily what these animals want to eat either. So it's a crazy scenario we're in, and it's very inefficient. And as I said, we're warming the planet as a result. It's fascinating. And the people that eat a lot of these foods, the high animal product diet, in addition to refined foods and junk foods that are processed with more corn products like high fructose corn syrup and corn oil or soybean oil, these foods aren't healthy for us. And as a result, we have this epidemic of chronic diseases, heart disease, diabetes, cancer, autoimmune diseases. We've brought this all on ourselves. And here on It's All About Food, we give you the truth and tools for a healthy vegan diet, a way to get back to sanity, a way to bring back health, not only for humans, but for animals and for the planet and all life on Earth. And you know what? We think that it's the most delicious way to live. So it's a win-win-win-win-win-win, the things that we talk about here on this program. How's that? That's It's All About Food. And we have cookbook authors and we have athletes who show you you can be strong and muscly living on plants. And we have scientists who bring the research, the sensible research, not the stuff that you hear on social media all the time that's based on nothing. And we have doctors and dietitians. We talk to a lot of people that know a lot about food. And I am a vegan for over 33 years. I've realized recently my mission is to make more vegans. But we don't only talk to vegans on this program. We also talk to food experts who are not vegan. I always like to ask them why they're not vegan, and their answers are interesting. But there are a lot of good things that a lot of people bring to the food movement who aren't eating a completely plant diet. And we want to hear from them too. And we want to work with them too, because there's strength in numbers. And when people from all different movements come together and say, no, we don't want genetically modified foods. No, we don't want monocrops being grown. We want diversity. We want a wide range of colorful fruits and vegetables being grown sustainably and locally around the planet. And with that, I want to bring on my co-host, my best friend, my partner in life, who shares this crazy lifestyle that we live deliciously with me, Gary DiMattei.
Karen, I don't think it's crazy at all. I think it's really wonderful. I think everybody else is crazy.
I do too.
Yeah.
Yeah. This normal thing. I never liked the word normal, right?
No.
I remember the musical The Fantastics.
Try to remember the kind of September.
Right. And the young female lead she sings a song about life, and at the end she says, "Please, God, please don't let me be normal."
Yeah, that's a great line. Now, you played the girl in The Fantastics, right?
I did. It was fantastic.
It was fantastic. Although that's, The Fantastics is spelled...
with a K.
Yeah.
Right?
Sticks.
Yeah.
Fantastics.
Why is that? Fantastics.
Because it's Fantastics.
And you know what I love about that show?
What?
They have a song about being vegetarian.
That's right. Plant a radish, get a radish, not a Brussels sprout. That's why I like vegetables. You know what they're about.
Life is very, you're very vegetarian. A man who plants a garden is a very happy man.
A very happy something like that. Yeah, so what you were talking about, the disasters that are now happening all over the planet with respect to weather, I think what you were alluding to was that it may not be too late, although the UN climate change report that came out not long ago was trying to shock people into
the reality we're in trouble.
That it's code red for humanity. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres was very serious with that report, and it addressed all of the things that you're talking about that we talk about here on this show. And as you said, you've had many guests, many authors, many doctors, many scientists, specialists who say that some say it's irreversible. Others say there's still hope, but we have to act now. We all have to act now. And one of the easiest ways to do that is by adopting a plant-based diet.
I'm glad you brought up that report. I've been a broken record for more than 30 years, along with a lot of other people. And we've been talking about the concept of global warming for decades.
Right.
And there have been some really frightening scientific reports that have come out. And very often I've read that these reports have been conservative, that the scientists never tell you everything for a number of reasons, because they want their articles to be printed. They want their information to get out. And if it was too scary, some people might not even print it.
Right.
So they've been careful and they've been conservative. And when we get a report that says, red alert, red alert, red alert, I mean, it's like super hot red alert because it's been red alert for a long time. But then some people will say, okay, you've been talking about it for 30 decades and nothing has really happened. Well, things have been happening. And if maybe like 100 years from now, if we survive, if they look back at this time period, 30 years will just seem like, you know, a second, where the trend was obvious. The earth was warming. We were getting more hurricanes, more droughts, more floods, more fires, and we didn't do much about it. And hopefully, we're going to start to do something about it very soon.
I think some of the things that folks can take away from all of this, if they spent some time looking at this report, is that there are some immediate ways that you can start to make a difference. Obviously, a lot of people are talking about electric cars. And when we were in California just recently, we saw a lot of electric cars. And it was kind of nice. I'm not sure if that's going to last, that trend's going to continue, but that's one of the ways. But the quickest way is the way that you have been talking about on this program for all of those years. And that is to adopt a plant-based diet. We just returned from driving across the country. We started in May. We drove to California. And we took Highway 80. And if anyone has taken Highway 80 West, you know that it really is a very vast country that we inhabit. Lots of open space. And lots of fields and fields and fields of corn and all of the things that you were talking about just now. That food is grown with all of the chemicals that you mentioned, primarily to feed animals. I doubt any of that food, especially the corn, which is also used as fuel, as high fructose corn syrup, and as animal feed, is grown for reasons other than feeding humans or indirectly feeding humans. That is a major contributor to all of the things that we talk about on the show that are negative.
So when we were driving out in May, the fields were pretty empty. I didn't know what they were growing. They were flat. And then we just drove back. We left on August 18th, and coming back and driving through Nebraska, Iowa, and Indiana, we saw miles and miles and miles and miles of cornfields, and the corn was as high as an elephant's eye, probably higher than natural because it'd been fed all kinds of fertilizers.
And petrochemicals and...
Petrochemicals, the nutrients, extra nutrients that end up leaching out of the soil and into the water and polluting the waterways, etc.
And it wasn't hard to see that it was genetically modified because I grew up on a small farm in San Jose, California, and my grandfather and my father and my uncles would grow corn on the farm. And it was different. It was varying heights because this was organic corn. So some of the corn stalks were tall. Some of the corn stalks were small. And it depended, right, on a bunch of things that I can't explain. This was clear to see. This corn that we were driving through was clear to see that it was genetically modified because it was all...
Everything was uniform.
The same height.
Right? The same height.
And that was really scary. Now, I don't know if somebody goes along with pruning shears and prunes each of the stalks, the millions of stalks. I doubt it. It looked to me like somebody was tampering with a seed in a laboratory just so that this corn could have a specific...
Each stalk would be the same, right?
Yeah.
Because we liked the same thing.
That was scary. That was very scary. And it was like when we went to the feedlot way back when you were asked to speak on a panel about climate change. As the lone vegan, we went and saw these animals, and it reminded me, when we saw the corn, of these animals that were all bred to be the same exact size.
That's right.
And
yeah.
It was very, very scary.
Okay, putting all that aside, I love to eat corn on the cob in the summer. That's been a very special thing ever since I grew up. And Long Island corn has always been the best, in my opinion.
Right.
Long Island corn. And it's impossible today in 2021, nearly impossible, to find organic corn on the cob.
And when driving through all that corn, I could see why.
It's probably hard to do it, too. I'm thinking now, I remember some time ago reading that organic popcorn and other organic corn products, we were getting them from Europe and other places because it was really hard to grow organic corn here because it would cross-pollinate with the genetically modified corns.
I can see why.
It's everywhere, right?
Thousands and thousands and thousands of acres. If you drive down 80, you know what I'm talking about. Pretty frightening. So there's the methane gas emissions from animal agriculture, which we've talked about on this program for years. And that's a contributor to global warming. So what can people do? People can listen to this program and other programs like it and start reversing that by what you put on your plate. And it looks to me like that is the quickest way to do this.
Absolutely. So when we were driving back, we did it differently than driving to California. On the way back, we were a little more relaxed with the pandemic. Not in a way that we weren't careful because we masked
everywhere. We wear masks, we're vaccinated.
But now we go into stores. We're not afraid to go into a supermarket and buy food. So we didn't carry a lot of food with us on the way back like we did on the way to California.
Right.
And we did go into some restaurants and we even sat down in one or two indoors.
Right, we did.
We were brave. We got to visit Zest Kitchen in Salt Lake City.
Yes.
Which we were really looking forward to after discovering it on the way out. And it was, come on, Gary, it was like one of the best places we've gotten vegan food,
yeah.
Period.
It was great. Now, that could have been because we were starving. Or that could have been because it was really, really good. I really enjoyed it. We both did, didn't we? We both had pizza.
We did. And so amazing.
Yeah, yours had a lot of really great goodies on it. Mine was pretty basic. It was vegan cheese, basil, and tomato sauce.
Yeah, and I had things like mushrooms.
But you also had arugula.
It was really good.
It was very creative. It was very California Pizza Kitchen. It was very California.
Yeah, I want to talk about California in a minute.
Yeah. But
and then as we continued on, we stopped at another place in State College, Pennsylvania. State College is the home of Penn State. How many alumni of Penn State University
Probably
out there?
A lot out there because that's a big campus.
Big campus.
A lot of people.
I am not an alumnus of Penn State. I went to Bucknell University, which is about an hour drive from Penn State. But my senior year, I spent a lot of time at Penn State because I had a rock band that played at Penn State. Penn State is a great party school, and they had a lot more bars to play at than where I was going to school, which had like, it was a very sleepy town.
That's really cool because the bars had live music, and a lot of bars don't have live music anymore.
That's true. And we drove through and stayed in State College, and 3 out of 4 of the bars that I played in are still there.
They are.
And they didn't have live music the night we were there because it was Monday, I think.
Yes.
But they were rocking.
Yeah.
And I was very excited to see them and see them open. But we stopped at a place called Roots Natural Kitchen.
Right. Very nice.
It wasn't vegan, but they had many options. You could make your own customized bowls.
Right.
Lots of fresh food.
Bowls are very popular now, and a lot of restaurants are doing bowls, and they're offering vegan options, and this was one of them.
It's smart.
Yeah. What they did was they took a big mess of shredded kale, probably kale that they bought from a purveyor that was already shredded. Like, you can find it at Whole Foods, or you could also find it at
Trader Joe's.
It's these bags of shredded kale. So they had these big, big buckets of shredded kale, and they would mix all kinds of stuff with the kale. I had a bowl that was mixed with rice and jalapeno peppers and, you know, lots of really spicy.
It had a cilantro lime dressing, spicy.
Yeah,
really.
It had a slime dressing.
We call it slime.
And then they put on this flavored tofu on top. It was really great. Again, it could have been just because we were starving. Because we didn't bring a whole lot of food, as Karen mentioned, on the road, but it was mighty tasty, and we sat outside. So if you're in State College, Pennsylvania, and you're looking for a place with vegan options, check out Roots. And if you're in Salt Lake City, check out Zest Kitchen.
Yeah, they're both kitchens, Zest Kitchen and Roots Natural Kitchen.
Yeah, it was great.
So if you can't find your own kitchen, there are other kitchens you can visit.
And then, as Karen mentioned, we went into a lot of grocery stores and used the hotel microwaves. We stayed in hotels that had little refrigerators and little microwaves. And I recommend that for anybody who's traveling across country, whether you're plant-based or not, because it makes life easier. And then we came home to New York, and we don't have a microwave.
And life is no longer easy.
And now we're back to being chefs.
Sweaty chefs, because we came back to New York when it was hot and humid.
Right. But we're not starving.
We're not starving anymore.
We're having a wonderful time being back, it's doing something that it didn't do when we were in California. It's raining. New York gets a lot of water. Hopefully that will continue, but not too much because we don't want flooding.
Let me ask you a question, Gary, speaking of the weather.
Yes.
Which atmosphere do you prefer? Do you like hot and humid? Do you like hurricanes? Do you like flash floods? Do you like drought and fire? Which kind of atmosphere do you like?
I like the atmosphere we have here in New York, as much as you're going to be surprised that I just said that. Now listen, when we were in California, it was 4 perfect months of weather.
Perfect.
I am a native Californian. I lived there for years. And believe me, that was as perfect as it gets.
The sunshine every day. It never got too hot. Even when it was hot, we were in Palo Alto where there were trees and shade. It was literally paradise.
The day we were leaving, everything changed. The smoke was starting to drift in from some fires up north, and the air quality went from perfect to dangerous. We bought a HEPA filter to put in the car.
This was a great product. Can I just, I'm going to do a little product promotion here. We don't get any credit.
Yeah, no,
for this
I think this is really important to talk about these things.
It was your idea, actually, because I was more neurotic than you were about driving through smoky territory.
But rightfully so. You should have been neurotic because once we started driving through it, it was frightening.
There were some smoky places. So right now there are fires in South Lake Tahoe that are spreading around. And before the Tahoe fire, there was a fire that was getting into the Reno area, and we were going to be driving through Reno, and Sacramento at the time was very, very smoky. We got a product called Air Therial, and it's this nice little air purifier. It's got a HEPA filter in it, and you can plug it in at home and use it in a room, but you can also bring it in the car and plug it into the car power adapter.
It used to be the thing your cigarette lighter used to be in, but now it's just the power outlet.
Right. And it really works.
Yeah, it's great. And we drove through some smoky territory as we were driving through Sacramento, as Karen just mentioned, and also on our way to Reno. Once we got to Reno, things cleared up. It looked pretty great.
We were lucky.
Yeah.
We were so lucky.
We were very lucky. But we were tracking it, as you can do now with the apps on your phone. You can track the air quality, and so you can be prepared. And that's basically what I felt we were, was prepared. And it's better to be overly prepared than not enough. So we had our N95 masks, we had our HEPA filter, and we started hitting the road from California to where we are now, which is Queens, New York City.
Yeah, so once again, these are crazy times. We're getting more extreme weather, and it's something that humans have brought on.
Right.
And then you have to add to that COVID and variants.
Which is also, some say, human. That have brought on by humans. All right, so there's this climate change report. It's shocking people, but is it making people numb? No, it's giving people some pointers, and it's holding politicians accountable. And you came to the right place to know how you can do something without investing a whole lot of money, and that is go vegan. Stop eating animal products. Start eating plant foods. Buy organic. Don't subsidize huge companies that attack the atmosphere. Support companies that are gentle on the environment.
And then we have to add to that. So it's a wonderful thing that there are more vegan products. I'm very happy about that because in our capitalistic society, products succeed when entrepreneurs and investors see an open market. They see more people interested in plant-based foods. That's a beautiful thing.
Beautiful thing.
What's not beautiful is all the crap that's been added to the market. All of the garbage vegan foods that are out there. That's not what we're promoting. If you want an occasional treat that's made of junk, fine. But most of the time, we're recommending whole and minimally processed foods. Beans, greens, whole grains, fruits, vegetables, nuts and seeds, preferably organic. This is the foundation of life.
Yes. And we talked about bowls. And you can really make a tasty meal in a bowl. And you could have some grains and some beans. And you could make a wonderful sauce using not a lot of oil. It can be spicy. It can be sweet. You know, and you can do all of that by listening to this program and getting some really great recipes on our website at responsibleeatingandliving.com. And make it one of your favorites so that you don't have to type responsibleeatingandliving.com. You can just press the little button and find us. We have so many archived podcasts from this program with all of these experts that we're talking about. Everything is logged in. Everything is organized.
Let me also add that if you're looking for something specific and you can't find it on our website, all you have to do is ask. Send us an email at info@realmeals.org and I'll send you a link to something or give you the answer that you're looking for. And if we don't know it, we'll try our hardest to find the answer for you. That's
right.
All we do. We're here for you. For free.
There's a lot of restaurants that are now offering vegan options. The thing that I have found when I go into a restaurant, like a major chain restaurant, is yes, they will, most of them will have, for example, the Cheesecake Factory. Okay, who doesn't have a Cheesecake Factory in their neighborhood?
There are lots of different chains now that are offering a mix for everybody, gluten-free, vegan options, nut-free, because everybody's got issues with food.
And so, yes, they're offering these vegan burgers like Beyond Burger and Impossible Burger. But the really cool thing is they're also offering great salads and bowls, which are usually, there's only maybe one or two, and like Roots and like Zest. They have some really healthy, tasty options. And we found those on our trip across country. And sometimes they're hard to find, but you have to seek and ye shall find, right?
Yeah.
You have to ask your server if they can turn something vegan. Now, this is information that you probably already know, but it doesn't hurt to continue to remind you that you can go out to dinner or lunch with your friends who are not vegan, who are not plant-based, and find something to eat. I know we just did that when we were in California. We went out with a lot of family and friends. And a shout out to some of my family members who they were having an anniversary party for my cousin. And it was a 50th wedding anniversary. And they actually contacted us because they knew we were the crazy vegans in the family. And said, we want to have a vegan option for you at our family event. And so shout out to Cynthia and Marie for doing that for us, if you're listening. The really funny thing is we were the only two vegans there, and they had these five or six entrees that were vegan, and I didn't get one because the meat eating people were eating the vegan option, and they said, this is very tasty. This is very good. But Karen, you had one, right?
Yeah, it was a really great stack.
It was a stack
of eggplant and other vegetables,
and polenta.
It was in a nice cylindrical form.
And a little red sauce
on top of polenta. But you know, it was from the catering company of your cousin,
right? And a shout out to the catering company,
Chef Dan Pagoni, the owner of Handheld Catering and Events, and his partner Brenda Marcella.
It was really cool to see that, but we've got a long way to go.
Can we talk about what makes some of the history here and how it has actually enhanced having vegan options available?
Yeah.
Can we give a credit to California cuisine?
I think we can. I think we should. So, which is very interesting because it is the 50-year anniversary of a little restaurant in Berkeley called Chez Panisse. And Chez Panisse is a Berkeley, California restaurant known as one of the inspirations for the style of cooking known as California cuisine. Mm. Now, restaurateur, author, and food activist Alice Waters opened Chez Panisse in 1971 with film producer Paul Arato, then a professor of comparative literature at the University of California, Berkeley. Yeah, 50 years for any business is amazing.
Amazing.
But a restaurant is unheard of. California cuisine is a food movement, and I'm going to quote Wikipedia here because it's easier. It's a food movement that originated in California. The cuisine focuses on dishes that are driven by local and sustainable ingredients with an attention to seasonality and an emphasis on the bounty of the region.
Mm.
Okay. And now the food is historically chef-driven. Dishes and meals are low in saturated fats and high in fresh vegetables and fruit. Of course, they add in there that they also add lean meats and seafood from the California coast, often define the style. All right, so the term California cuisine arose as a result of culinary movements in the last decades of the 20th century and should not be confused with the traditional foods of California. So some of the influences of California cuisine are every other cuisine, French, American, Italian, Mexican, Chinese, Japanese, and so many others have influenced this, what is known as California fusion cuisine, right?
Mm.
There are many others that have influenced California cuisine. 50 years, Chez Panisse has been in business. And the template that Chez Panisse used, or could very well have used for all of California cuisine, was credited to one of the first proponents of using fresh, locally available foods, was someone by the name of Helen Evans Brown, who became friends with James Beard after publishing Helen Brown's West Coast Cookbook in 1952. Anyway, what we're talking about here is I feel that this has really influenced the idea that you were just reinforcing, which is offering vegan items on menus that normally have fried foods and unhealthy dishes.
They offer more real foods,
right,
which is very plant-based.
Right. And another thing that they made very popular, Wolfgang Puck especially, Alice Waters, Jeremiah Towers, all of these gurus of California cuisine that opened restaurants, was the small individual-sized pizzas that you can find now on just about every menu in every restaurant, right? These flatbreads, these small, everybody gets their own pizza. And yours, as I mentioned, at
Zest Kitchen.
Zest was really very much like a California cuisine pizza. It had arugula on top. It had pesto. It had a lot of, it just wasn't like mine, which was a plain vegan cheese and tomato sauce pizza. It was actually something that was a meal in and of
itself.
Yeah,
we got pizzas at True Food Kitchen in California too,
right.
Individual size. It's a thing. And it's nice because not everybody likes the same toppings on their pizza.
Right. And so, and there's also lots of vegetables. And when I was in Italy many, many years ago, they would serve pizza with everything piled on top, not something uniformly placed, but large piles of salad and large piles of vegetables. And so the bread was just there, or the dough, or the pizza crust was just there to soak up all of the sauce. And
pizza's a thing.
Yeah.
And a lot of people like pizza. And when we were driving across country, especially California to New York, this most recent trip, there were billboards like every few seconds. Next stop, pizza. Next stop, pizza. Now, of course, that's not the kind of pizza we're promoting, but maybe we can transition to more of these pizzas that are healthier with a better dough that's either wheat-based or gluten-free, but not so refined.
Right.
And not with added sugar, salt, and oil.
No.
And certainly no dairy.
Right.
More vegetables, more locally grown food. Pizza can be a healthy option if it's made with real ingredients.
Absolutely.
And the crust is really thin.
Right. And some say that has these individual sized pizzas that have a variety of toppings that are unusual, not necessarily something you would find on a pepperoni pizza. Again, arugula, fresh tomatoes, drizzled olive oil. A lot of people are doing that. A lot of people are doing toasts now. Avocado toast.
Mm.
That's a big hit at a lot of restaurants that are both vegan and non-vegan alike.
Just added one to the Cheesecake Factory.
Right. And I had that. It was an appetizer and I had it for lunch when we went to celebrate your mom's birthday. All of these can be attributed to California cuisine, which today one of the icons of that movement, Chez Panisse, in 1971, opened and is still running in Berkeley.
50 years.
50 years later. So hats off, Chez Panisse. And I hope may you reign another 50 years and may you be completely vegan soon. I doubt that'll happen because Alice likes to use a little bit of cheese and meat and things like that. But she does have options for vegans at her restaurant. And the other thing that's really important to note is that we're making great strides in the vegan movement with cheese. A lot of people, you couldn't find cheese before, but now, thanks to a lot of really wonderful people out there that are continuing to stick to it, they are coming up with some amazing cheeses that a lot of folks are saying they can't tell the difference between that and the real thing. Or, I guess,
it is real. It's just made from nuts and seeds,
exactly.
And not from animal fluids.
So these are some of the things you can do to help reverse climate change, which is obviously here to stay unless we do something, unless we act now and take a look at that UN report. Maybe we can put a copy of it up on the page for you to link to after this.
Absolutely.
Program. And really, don't be numb. It's not, the report isn't there to numb you so that you do nothing, so that you feel like you are helpless. You are not helpless. This is the first thing that you can do, and that's what you put on your plate will help, and it is helping. We need to stop factory farming. We need to stop releasing methane into the atmosphere. We need to do all of the things that they're telling us to do, and one of the ways to do that is to hold your politicians accountable and to have them read these reports and read between the lines and say what we're saying, that we all need to stop eating animals. We all need to stop growing crops to feed animals. We need to grow crops to feed people,
Amen.
Not animals.
Now let's get to a related subject, which is chronic disease. And people of a certain age, as we get older, are more affected by chronic diseases because as we live the lifestyle we're living with the standard American diet, known as SAD,
S-A-D,
the years of poor eating and poor living accumulate, and our arteries get covered in plaque, and things start to fall apart in different ways. People get heart disease. Sometimes they'll need a stent. People get diabetes. Of course, cancer is everywhere. We need to change this. And we need to change it by eating a whole food plant diet and getting some exercise. Meditation certainly helps. All of these are important. And when we go out with our friends and family, people like to talk about their illnesses and going to the doctor and the procedures they're having. And
yeah, they're almost like a badge of honor, right?
Yeah, it's like the kind of conversation. I don't like this kind of conversation. It's a downer. And it's especially frustrating, you, Gary, and I, when we're sitting with people, because most of the time, we know how to solve these problems. But we know these people that we're with don't want to hear about it. If somebody is talking about an ailment and they ask us if we have recommendations, I'm more than happy to give resources and information and tips. That's what I love to do. But most of the time, people aren't asking. And a lot of times, they're people that know what we're about. They know we're about healthy eating. They know what we're going to tell them. And they don't want to know the answer. Okay, so what do we do? Gary, you've come up with a great response or a great reaction. When somebody is talking about their health issues, all the procedures that they're having, you change the subject.
Yes, absolutely, all the time.
Yeah, and what you do is you bring light to the conversation. You talk about the wonderful things the individual has done or is doing and is involved with, and lifting their life up.
Well, you taught me that there is a reason somebody is talking about their ailments. And that is because they want love.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Right?
So many issues with food are related to emotional problems and trauma.
I've never been in analysis. I've never gone to a psychologist or a psychiatrist. So I don't know what I'm talking about. But one of the things that I have done and made a life study of is human behavior, because I'm an actor. I'm a director, I'm a writer, I'm an artist. So one of the things that you brought to light with this movement is that when people are talking about their boo-boos, when people are talking about their owies, they usually want someone to just pat them on the back and say that they're wonderful and that they hope they get through it, right? And so what I usually like to do now is I usually like to, in earnest, and I mean this, it's not that I'm trying to change the subject because I don't want to talk to this person, but I want to point out to this person that they are of value, not only to me as their friend, but to society, because they have done a lot of good. What I would like someone to say to me when I am talking about my ailments is, you're going to be okay. And look at all the good you've done. And if it's really serious, Then I point to you and say, Karen, what do you recommend?
Exactly, but only if they ask.
But only if they ask. Because a lot of people will turn around and tell you, if you don't wait for them to ask, you don't know my suffering, you don't know what I've been through, you don't know my story, how dare you tell me what I should be doing? And so that's why we have learned that our opinion isn't wanted unless someone asks for it.
But I think you've really hit on something that has value by not focusing on what's bothering an individual. Of course, you can say, yes, I'm sorry you're going through this, and I acknowledge this, and you're taking care of it, you're seeing your specialist, whatever, but look over here. Look over here where your life is good. Look over here where you're doing wonderful things. And I think when you concentrate on the good, you feel better. Even when you're having difficulty, you still feel better acknowledging the good, acknowledging the light, and that helps you heal. We both know love heals.
Right. And don't you think, you just said concentrating on the good, don't you think that adopting a vegan diet is concentrating on the good?
Of course.
Because these people aren't bad people who aren't vegan. They just have been brainwashed into thinking that it's good to eat these products. But they don't realize that they're contributing not only to climate change, but also they're contributing to the pain and suffering of animals.
And we don't have evidence of this. There may be some out there a little bit, but I believe that when they're consuming animals that have been tortured, that are sad, that have been separated from their family members and their friends and have lived an abysmal life, they have generated chemicals in their body that goes along with their anxiety and their fear. And then we consume those animals and we augment the feelings of anxiety and fear because we're consuming those chemicals that make us feel those emotions.
That's very, very true. I believe that because I was someone who consumed all of that pain and suffering, and I was not only suffering health-wise, but I was suffering emotionally. And ever since I adopted a vegan lifestyle, that kind of suffering has gone away.
So in conclusion, we are recommending that if you're in a situation where people are eating in a way that is unhealthful, or they're complaining about their ailments, and you know you can help them, but they're not asking for help, we recommend changing the subject.
Yes.
And changing it to something uplifting, focusing on the person who's talking about themselves, who obviously needs love and attention, and find the good in them and in what they're doing.
Especially if you're being driven crazy by people who all they talk about are health-related issues, right? And then when you are with them, you see that they are contributing to their health problems by what they're putting in their mouths. It's maddening because what you really want to do is say, well, obviously the reason you are suffering from this ailment is because of what I've just watched you eat for the last hour and a half.
Exactly.
So, or why you wake up feeling the way you feel is because of the food that you're eating.
I think many times we're frustrated because we can't control the situation. We all want to control everything, and we want to control it in the way that we want to see things. And when we're dealing with other people who aren't eating the way we think they should be eating, we want to control and say, you should be doing this. But the way to get a certain amount of control of the situation is to change the subject.
Right.
And then everybody feels better. You feel better because you've got a little control.
So the thing that I like to do is point out the positive about the person that I'm with who is complaining about their ailments. And there are so many positive things about everyone. What I think these people need, and again, I am not an expert. I don't know this to be truth. I don't know this to be fact. It's just a hunch I'm going on, and it seems to work. Is that these people need to be reminded that they have other things going for them in addition to their medical problems. And as you found out going through cancer, some of the things that we did were not to focus on the disease, but to focus on laughter, to focus on light, to focus on love, to focus
singing,
focus on thinking about all of the positive things in life. In addition to the fact that you had to go through this little blip, you were trying to take care of yourself in many other ways. We tried to keep things light any way we could and remind ourselves that there was a lot of other things going on other than this disease. Because living in the disease, morning, noon, and night is basically what a lot of people get involved with. And to me, again, not an expert, I would think that that just common sense tells you that's only going to lead to more disease. It's only going to lead to more pain and suffering for you.
Well, it all connects to what Dr. Bruce Lipton says. If you're familiar with Dr. Bruce Lipton, he put together very eloquently this concept that the cells in our body respond to the environment they perceive. And when I first got that during my cancer journey, I was like, wow, I'm in control of this. And so I figured out a way to communicate to my cells to get the message. We are going to survive and we are going to thrive. And if we're constantly bringing ourselves down, the cells get that message. We're going down, down, down. And that's why changing the subject to something beautiful, something filled with love, something uplifting is going to be healing.
Yeah, something true.
And true.
About the individual.
Beautiful.
Because I don't believe that ailments are truth. I don't believe that an ailment is your truth. I believe that it is something that you are emotionally responding to.
Mm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
But I think based on some of the teachings of Bruce Lipton and some of the teachings of Karen Hartglass and other people that you have had on this program, I've been able to come to this conclusion that when something is bothering us, as Bruce would say, when we are in dis-ease, right? When we are not in ease, when we are in dis-ease, that it's only going to get worse unless we do things to counteract the dis-ease. Unless we try to lift ourselves up and be in ease. As one of our favorite yoga gurus says, be light and humorous.
Oh, Rodney Yee. Be light and humorous.
Be light and humorous. And so, yes, you may be suffering from a horrible disease, but what helps is to point out your strengths as well. And that's what I like to do. So going a long way to get to the conclusion of your question, what do? I try to point out the person's positive attributes.
Beautiful.
And there are many. Everyone has them.
Yes.
Everyone has them, and they need to be reminded.
Okay, moving on to the last thing I wanted to talk about today before we end this program is treats. And
treats.
I want to talk about treats. Now, I was just talking earlier, what we want to focus our diet on is whole foods, minimally processed foods, greens, beans, whole grains, legumes, nuts and seeds, minimal or no oil, minimal or no salt, very little refined sugar and refined flours, right? But sometimes it's time for a celebration and a treat. And what are you going to do? You can make your own cookies and cakes, or you can go to bakeries and pick them up and have your cake celebration. So it was my mother's 88th birthday this week.
Happy birthday, Lois.
Happy birthday, Lois. And I went to her house the day of her birthday, which was on Thursday. And we had just gotten back from our trip. I was not about to bake a cake. And I stopped into Whole Foods and I found a small vegan cake, chocolate cake. I brought it to her home and we shared it with a few of her friends. And I was very grateful that was available.
Right.
And then a few days later, we were celebrating with my brother's family. My niece has celiac and I've learned a lot about gluten-free baking since her diagnosis. And so I wanted to find a vegan gluten-free cake. And more bakeries are doing gluten-free cakes and vegan cakes and gluten-free vegan cakes, but you have to order at least 24 hours in advance or a week in advance, and mea culpa, I did not think ahead. And I knew there was a bakery on the way to Mom's house, It's called Bare Naked Bakery. Now, I think it used to be called Bare Buns Bakery. Maybe somebody was offended by the name and they changed it Bare Naked. I don't know, but you can Google both of them and they pop up. And there seem to be a few of them. And we had been there before. And what I'm excited about is now they have many more options that are vegan and gluten-free. Not either or, but both. And they had 6 cakes in the display case all ready to go that were vegan and gluten-free. And a really nice size, not too big, small. And they also had lots of fun, pretty, gluten-free vegan cookies. Now, I have to add a caveat. They were not cheap.
Yeah, well, no bakery is really anymore. I mean, especially if they specialize. So, yeah. So,
but I was so grateful because they were beautiful.
Yeah, we had fun there.
They were tasty. And everybody was happy. And we had a nice celebration.
What was their name again?
Bare Naked Bakery.
Yeah, it was great. The person behind the counter was very helpful. And they seemed really knowledgeable in their products. And it's always nice to go into an establishment that is very efficient, very clean. So if you're out on Long Island and you want to buy a vegan, gluten-free cake, check out Bare Naked Bakery.
The nice thing about getting a small cake, what was the dimension of that small cake? I don't know. It was like
6 inch, maybe? 8 inch?
8 inch.
Yeah, 8 inch.
Listen, really... Not even 8 inch, but maybe it was 8 inch.
Because everybody wants a sliver.
Everybody wants a sliver. You can cut it into really small pieces.
Give me a sliver.
You just get enough sweetness and you don't have to overindulge because it's not really good for you.
Paper thin, those slivers, too.
It's just enough sweetness.
They're like typing paper. They're so thin. But who even remembers typing paper?
Or typing. Yeah.
Right. Something we do all the time, and we don't know what it's called.
Anyway,
it's called typing.
I'm grateful for the Bare Naked Bakery.
Yes, and all the businesses that we don't get any kickbacks from, but we like mentioning on this program, because as Karen mentioned earlier in the program, we are a non-profit 501c3. We don't do this for the money. We do this for you.
I know I said that was the last thing I wanted to talk about, but
you've got one more thing.
One more last thing. And that is another buckwheat crepe update from Responsible Eating and Living and the It's All About Food podcast. Now, we talk about buckwheat crepes from time to time, and we have a most excellent buckwheat crepe recipe at Responsible Eating and Living.
And easy.
It's easy and delicious. And I tried to make it while we were in California at the home we were house-sitting at, which... was amazing in that it had a great kitchen filled with great
supplies.
Professional
kitchen.
But it didn't have a blender that was high-powered enough to make my own buckwheat
flour.
It
may have been high-powered enough, but we did not know how to use it.
Maybe we didn't know how to use it.
It was very complex.
And I tried a number of times to make my famous buckwheat crepe recipe.
It was one of these blenders that has like 6 blades. You know, you've seen them? There's like this tower of blades that you put in the hopper. I didn't know how to use it.
Yeah, anyway, I couldn't get the buckwheat to grind fine enough. It didn't make the best crepe. It was really hard to manage. And plus, the pan we were using, it was a cast iron pan, but it wasn't that user-friendly. And I tried. And I kind of failed. And I got home.
They were tasty, but...
They were tasty,
but... They weren't uniform.
No. And I got home, I just blended up our buckwheat flour in our Vitamix, I used our cast iron crepe pan, and I made beautiful crepes. So if you do try our recipe, and you're not having success with it, I invite you to email us at info@realmeals.org. We'll have a conversation about it, and hopefully I can lead you to the perfect buckwheat crepe.
Right.
Because life is worth it, and you deserve it.
Right. These are great crepes. Great crepe.
And there we have it.
To wrap it up, go vegan, save the planet.
Go vegan, save the planet. Get your family and friends and work colleagues. Everybody needs to do it. We all need to be together in this because we all share the same air. We all share the same water. We all share the same soil. We all share the same planet. And if the planet goes down, or if the planet makes itself uninhabitable for humans, we all lose. So we all are in this together. And never think that one person cannot make a difference. That has been proven untrue over and over and over. You can make a difference, and you can start right now. Okay, everybody, that's it for today. I hope you enjoyed our program. Gary, thanks again for joining me.
It's a pleasure, Karen. You have a great, great day yourself.
Thank you. Everybody,
have a delicious week.